Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University. Yale Global Editor Nayan Chanda interviews Benazir Bhutto, former Prime Minister of Pakistan. The interview was conducted August 7th, 2007.
On August 7th last year, just over a month before Ms. Benazir Bhutto announced her decision to return to Pakistan, she was here at this studio at Yale University telling me as to why she wanted to go back home. She was determined to go back home because she said, I'm looking at this for saving my country from a militant takeover, God forbid, disintegration. She knew the dangers, and yet she went. She went back to Pakistan, and on December 27th, she was assassinated. At the rally that she was assassinated, she spoke against the militants. And here at the Yale studio, she told me, we want an end to the attacks on NATO and Afghan troops in the nearby Afghanistan. And we want an end to the militants who tried to hijack our foreign policy by conducting attacks on the Indian parliament and on other parts in India. So our world vision collides rather dramatically with the world vision of the extremism. And how deep is that collision? She paid with her life. Politics is as far removed from poetry as possible, so I cannot resist reading a little poem that you wrote some years ago. One has might, the other right. One has the sword, the other the pen. Guns rust and fall apart. Ideas live forever. So do you think President Musharraf's guns are rusting? And that is why he's turning to you to do a deal?
Certainly, there has been a degree of unease within Pakistan. General Musharraf had given a charter of where he wanted to take the country, which was towards a true democracy and a moderate society. However, in the last 6 years, we've seen that the extremists have spread throughout the country. And we used to think it was just in the tribal areas, but indeed the Red Mosque incident in our capital city of Islamabad showed that the tentacles of extremism were spreading, and that poses grave challenges to Pakistan from within, as well as complicates the external picture.
So the reason why he's now willing to sit down with you is because he's feeling that he is no longer in full control?
I see it differently. I think after 9/11, when the first general elections were held under General Musharraf, it was less than a year later, and he was seen very much as a strong ally of the West on which the international community could depend to reform the madrasas and to constrain and restrain the terrorist elements within the country. But unfortunately, since then, there has been the rise of suicide bombings. Innocent people in Pakistan, like our women and children, are being killed. And I think now the international community has started supporting the democratic process. Within Pakistan, we've had a pro-democracy movement, which has gathered strength as poverty in the country increased and people's needs were neglected. So this confluence has made the elections of 2007 very important. Mm-hmm. All the independent polls show that the Pakistan People's Party and I would go on to win any fair election. So I think that this is what is the need of drawing people together. Mm-hmm. In Pakistan, we have different fault lines. We have one on dictatorship versus democracy, and we have a second one on moderation versus fundamentalism or extremism. So I think that General Musharraf is trying to seek a way out by having these contacts with the Pakistan People's Party.
Mm-hmm. Nawaz Sharif has suggested that one should do everything to remove military from politics. And what you may be trying to do would be seen by people as prolonging the military rule rather than getting rid of military altogether.
I know that's what Mr. Nawaz Sharif is saying, but I don't agree. Mm-hmm. And I find it very strange that Mr. Nawaz Sharif talked to General Musharraf and got out in the year 2000, which did prolong military rule in my country. I was also offered that if I quit politics for 10 years, all the charges against me would be dropped and my husband would be released. But I refused that offer because I felt that it would prolong military rule in my country. And now I'm talking, because this is about getting the uniform out of the office of the presidency. This mm-hmm. is about facilitating the transfer to democracy. And as I said, we are talking, but we are not there yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm really not in a position to tell you today that there really will be an agreement on the facilitated transfer to democracy. But I do know one thing, that a facilitated transfer to democracy is far more preferable mm-hmm. than a situation of chaos on the streets that can be taken advantage of by extremist elements. So mm-hmm. as a Pakistani leader who wants to see the stability and unity of my country and see Pakistan go on the path of moderation, I think it's important for me to explore mm-hmm. peaceful political options mm-hmm. of a transfer to democracy. I will point out to you that no one believed when the Shah of Iran was facing street riots that it would end up in an Ayatollah revolution, but that's what happened. And when the Mensheviks took to the streets against in Russia, no one expected the Bolsheviks. So, you know, when we have a situation where we have militants who are armed and we have political parties who are unarmed, I would do my best to have a peaceful transfer. But if that fails, maybe I won't be able to stop the street mm-hmm. agitation. And that would be dangerous. So let's hope that we can indeed get, either through the negotiations we are having or through the Supreme Court of Pakistan, mm-hmm. Some kind of a facilitated and peaceful revival of the Constitution, restoration of the democratic process, and a redress of people's social and economic needs mm-hmm. so that terrorism and militancy can be undermined.
According to some press reports, the agreement that has been reached between you and President Musharraf is that he will be a civilian president, while you will be as a civilian president, he will be in charge of national security and foreign affairs, and you will be chief executive. And the ban on you as running prime minister for a third time will be lifted, and your family can return. Is there any truth in this?
These are certainly some of the issues that are being discussed. Mm-hmm. General Musharraf wants to get elected from the present assemblies. He thinks that's legal. We in the PPP believe that it's not legal, so this matter is going to be decided really by the courts and perhaps by public pressure mm-hmm. too. But ultimately, it's a decision of a legal dispute. The elections are going to be held later this year. My concern is that those elections should be fair, free, and impartial. I believe with the international crisis group that military intervention in the country is creating a failed state, which poses a danger to Pakistan's own security as well as regional security. So I'd like those elections to be fair. And I think any attempt by General Musharraf to manipulate those elections will lead to a far bigger internal crisis with far-reaching repercussions. Mm-hmm. We haven't reached an agreement yet, because everything the regime says it will do is post-presidential, prime ministerial, and parliamentary elections. Mm-hmm. And my party doesn't want to be led up the garden path. Mm-hmm. So we believe that the cooperation needs to be calibrated so that there are different phases of implementation.
Is it possible that if he gets reelected by the parliament one more time, but he makes you the interim prime minister so that there can be a free and fair election in December? Would you accept that?
No. I'm not looking at this for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at this for the empowerment of my people. And I'm looking at this for saving my country from a militant takeover, God forbid, disintegration. I think it's the worst crisis that we faced since 1971. What we are looking for is a cooperation once the uniform is off. The PPP cannot cooperate with a uniformed presidency which blurs the distinction between civil and military rule, because the PPP has been fighting every single military dictatorship that there has been in the country, and we symbolize the aspirations of the people for a democratic Pakistan. Mm-hmm. The PPP is also looking for the holding of fair elections. We won't like a situation where the elections are manipulated and then we are offered a handful of ministries in return for legitimizing a fraudulent election.
So what would be necessary for you to consider the elections will be fair and free? What would be the conditions?
Very good question. Very good question. The All Parties Conference held in July earlier this year, which was called for by the Alliance for the Restoration of Democracy, came up with the points that need to be implemented by the Election Commission of Pakistan for the holding of fair elections. And earlier, the very widely respected international group known as the NDI, the National Democratic Institute, held a round table of all political parties in Pakistan. And the round table also came up with proposals. And we have handed these proposals over to General Musharraf's side. And they have been promising us for some months that they will actually implement various proposals that have come during the time for fair elections. And they keep reassuring us that the elections will be fair. But unfortunately, except for transparent ballot boxes, none of those reforms have been implemented, which is really leading to some unease in the PPP circles and indeed the opposition circles that now the elections are around the corner. When is this all going to happen? When are these reforms going to be lifted? Then there is also the issue of a balance between the presidency and the parliament. I see little point in getting a parliament elected where the prime minister is thrown out 2 months later. I mean, we had this in the 90s, where the presidential power to dismiss parliaments was used ruthlessly, not only against Mr. Nawaz Sharif and myself twice, but even against Mr. Junejo. Mm. So we feel that there's little point in taking our country backwards to the instability of the 90s. We have to move forward towards a better political system where we know what the role and responsibility of the parliament is and what the role and responsibility of the president is.
And how does one reach that without a constitutional reform?
Well, General Musharraf assures us that he wants Parliament to have all the powers. Mm-hmm. And he says he doesn't want any powers himself. But there's a dichotomy because the Constitution actually gives all the key powers to the presidency. So this is an issue on which the discussions are still ongoing. Because while General Musharraf says he wants all powers to be with the Parliament, mm-hmm. he seems unwilling to give up the presidential power to dismiss the parliament. So we're still having ongoing discussions on that particular issue, but we agree, both sides agree, that the reforms should be implemented for fair elections. Both sides agree that the ban on the twice elected prime minister should go. Both sides agree that the moderate forces should come together. So there, and both sides agree there should be a level playing field and an end to motivated litigation. So there's a lot of agreement, apparent agreement on a lot of issues, while one or two still are outstanding. But right now the issue is, when is the implementation going to take place? Mm-hmm. And in which phase is this implementation going to take place? To complicate the issue, the ruling party has been saying that nothing will change and that they're not really negotiating with the PPP. They're just giving, in our local language, deal. That means a long rope. So this, and they keep talking about how they're going to impose emergency. So some people have cynically remarked that the Red Mosque incident mm-hmm. in Islamabad was actually cooked up by elements of the cabinet to provide a pretext for emergency, but their plan failed when the presidency decided to take action against the militants. So, you know, we're talking here about a country from which many key Al-Qaeda suspects have been, or terrorists have been arrested, like Abu Zubaydah, and Khalid Sheikh from Pindi, and Ramzi bin al-Shaib from Karachi. So we must remember that this is not just a war for Pakistan's heart and soul. This is something that will have far-reaching ramifications on militant struggles across our borders. We in the PPP are very determined to build peace. In fact, we say the message of Islam is peace. And we want peace for our citizens inside our country. We want an end to the attacks on NATO and Afghan troops in nearby Afghanistan. And we want an end to the militants who try to hijack our foreign policy by conducting attacks on the Indian parliament or on the other sites in India. So our world vision collides rather dramatically mm-hmm. with the world vision of the extremists. Now, Musharraf has said he's for moderation. And so we hope that he can do something up front that can facilitate moderate forces coming together.
This President Chaudhary Shujat Hussain of Pakistan Muslim League has said that maybe there will be imposition of emergency and assembly style will be extended for 1 year. If that happens, then what would be the position of your party?
I believe my party would join with all the other political parties to protest any attempt to defer the elections. What we have been telling all the other political parties, we had an all parties conference in London, and we all agreed on certain points for the holding of fair, free and impartial elections. But whereas the other political parties wanted to start a movement straight away, we said no. We have to wait. We have to wait and see whether either the elections are postponed or we have to wait and see whether the elections are rigged. But to start an agitation at this point might tempt the rulers into imposing emergency. But I do think that if the doors of election are shut on us and emergency is imposed or the elections are rigged, then certainly the PPP with the other political parties, civil groups and NGOs in Pakistan would put pressure like in Ukraine during the Orange Revolution for the empowerment of our people.
So you can see a street protest of the type that we saw recently involving the Chief Justice, perhaps even bigger with the participation of political parties.
That's right. Very much can see that happening. I wouldn't like to see it happening because I don't think Pakistan needs anarchy or civil strife or bloodshed. But both sides have a responsibility to prevent that. And the elections now give General Musharraf and the presidency as well as the military establishment an opportunity to take Pakistan safely from one phase of governance to another phase of governance. The spoilers are there. After all, why would those who have politically benefited from firing their shots from the shoulders of the military want to have fair elections, which will see them give up power and go into opposition? So I understand that there will be elements like the ruling PMLQ, which will do everything to scuttle a process of reconciliation and resolution, moving Pakistan onto a moderate course. But I think it's important for General Musharraf and the military establishment to stay the course, not to defer the elections, not to impose emergency, and to make sure that those elections are credible and satisfy the public. The public are the important people. We need international observers. Otherwise, there's just going to be name calling. So we need a third party that can certify whether the elections are going to be fair or not.
President Musharraf has been criticized recently, very severely in the United States, for not doing enough to actually capture the Al-Qaeda suspects hiding in Pakistan. What do you think of that? Do you think he's doing enough?
Well, I know that as a Pakistani, it certainly hurts me very much when I see that inevitably the trail of terrorists leads back to my country. If it's an issue of the tube bomber, we find that he had visited Pakistan, or if it's an issue of John Reed, the shoe bomber, we find that he had made a telephone call to Pakistan. If it's capturing the CEO of Al-Qaeda, Khalid Sheikh, we find that he was captured in Pakistan's garrison city of Rawalpindi. So it bothers us Pakistanis that our great nation should be associated with such elements. We don't want to make our country hospitable to such elements. And my party severely criticized the peace agreement that was signed in 2006 with the Taliban elements in the tribal regions of Pakistan. And we feel that our tribal areas were ceded to foreign elements, to Afghan Taliban and Arab and Chechen militant fighters. And now those groups actually administer parts of our territory and hold our people hostage. They dispense their own form of justice. They teach little 12-year-old boys to behead those they accuse of being spies. I mean, little children should have pens in their hand. Little children should have schools to go to. Little children should have dreams.
So why is it that it can still continue and still in Pakistani territory?
Well, this is a question that General Musharraf and his regime must answer. While they have certainly verbally expressed sentiment for the right course of eliminating terrorism and extremism in the country, unfortunately, they have not been able to assert the rule of law in the country. My government would move swiftly to assert law and order in the tribal areas of Pakistan, to hunt down the Al-Qaeda leaders who are trying to take advantage of the lack of law and order there, to stop the drug trade, which is actually funding and fueling terrorism, and to reform the political madrasas, who use the name madrasa, but are actually militant headquarters using women and children as human shields. I'm a woman, I'm a mother, I don't want to see the innocent women and children of my country held up as human shields and killed, as they were during the Red Mosque incident. And I think it's the duty of government to provide the protection of the life and liberty of its citizens.
So given that fact that despite President Musharraf's verbal assurances that he's doing everything, it is still continuing, in fact, increasing, can you blame the Americans if they said they would actually intervene without Pakistani permission?
Well, I can understand why they say that, because they feel that Islamabad has failed to stop the terrorists, and that's why they would like to move in. But I would really urge against that. I believe that the violation of Pakistan's sovereignty through unauthorized military action will have very adverse consequences. When under attack, all Pakistanis will forget their differences and they will all unite. So any unauthorized action would pit the NATO against all the people of Pakistan, and I don't think that's advisable. Mm-hmm. But I think what it is advisable is to have a close working relationship, and certainly when the PPP is elected to power, we intend to restore law and order to our tribal areas and prevent the militants from attacking NATO. So we intend to take away the causes that can today threaten airstrikes against Pakistan, and we also intend to work very closely with NATO and with the United States and other countries to eliminate terrorism, to help us also in our tribal areas to eliminate through intelligence sharing and other means of cooperation.
Pakistan has always sought a kind of strategic depth in Afghanistan as a part of its security policy. Do you think that policy has led to this alliance, de facto alliance between Pakistani ISI and Taliban? Can you change that?
Well, I certainly hope I can change it. I believe that the policy of strategic depth has backfired. And in fact, it was in 1998 that I stood up in the Parliament of Pakistan and I said that the policy of strategic depth is turning into one of strategic threat for Pakistan. And the passage of years have shown to me that indeed such a policy is leading to militancy, suicide bombers, weaponization, drug trade in Pakistan, to an increase in poverty and unemployment as the priorities of the state shift and these issues are neglected. So I want an end to that policy of strategic depth. I think Afghanistan has traditionally been viewed either as a buffer state or as a forward policy state where there is strategic depth. And throughout history, different empires, even the British Empire or the Greeks when they even came to that area, have looked at the issue in terms of strategic depth or buffer state. And I think for us, it's much better to have an Afghanistan that is peaceful, that allows us to trade with it, that has good relations with all its neighbors. And I think it's very promising that Afghanistan has joined the South Asian Association of Regional Countries. Mm-hmm. And I think for India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and the other countries of SAARC, this is where we should concentrate. We should try to create the economic interdependencies that allowed Europe to emerge from the ravages of two world wars and build a common market that has given unprecedented growth and an increase in the standard of living of ordinary Europeans. I mean, in the 50s, people were all on rations, and now they're spoiled for choice.
Yeah. Another issue where I think you mentioned India, Kashmir, seems to have been diffused a little bit. And do you see any prospect that if you return to Pakistan as Prime Minister, you would have a different approach than what has been tried by Musharraf?
No, I think Musharraf did the right thing in following the spirit of the Simla Agreement, which my father had signed with Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, and that the spirit of the declaration, Islamabad Declaration, wherein Rajiv Gandhi and I had decided to work for peaceful relations. Certainly the fighting over Kargil and the 1 million men who faced each other eyeball to eyeball after the Indian Parliament attack drove home the dramatic consequences of a conflict between India and Pakistan, who are both nuclear-capable states. I don't think we can afford this. I think Musharraf did the right thing. We've been very critical of him when he's done the wrong thing. But vis-a-vis the policy with India, or vis-a-vis the policy with women's rights, vis-a-vis restoring women's seat in parliament, well, we supported those measures because we don't believe in being totally rejectionist or being totally accepting. Mm-hmm. We believe in dealing with issue by issue. So yes, we would continue the process of dialogue with India. And not only that, I hope that in the 60th year of our anniversary, both countries are turning 60 in a few days' time, I hope that we can come and build a peace treaty that will enable our people to turn their backs on an unhappy past and look to a brighter future. Kashmir is an issue between us. It is a dispute. But then, you know, India has a dispute with China over the border, but they don't go to war with each other. So we need to learn that we can have differing opinions without actually allowing them to transform themselves into conflict, bloodshed, terrorism, militancy, or war.
Mm-hmm. When you were Prime Minister, how much were you aware of AQ Khan's nuclear sort of arms sales activities?
I was not at all aware of his nuclear arms sale opportunities. In fact, as Prime Minister of Pakistan, my government gave birth to the Benazir nuclear doctrine. Under this nuclear doctrine, Pakistan would not export nuclear technology. That was a cardinal principle of the doctrine. And we would not put together the components of a weapon unless our security was threatened, and that we would not shape and mold uranium into nuclear parts. So it was a policy that was bipartisan. It came through with consultations with the presidency and the armed forces. So it was accepted by all as part of the national interest. And to my knowledge, it held until India detonated its nuclear devices, and then Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif in retaliation detonated in Pakistan. So it was quite a shock that I learned that the no export of nuclear technology had been violated. And then I would not have believed it until AQ Khan came on television and confessed. And now the only question before us is that did he fall on his sword to protect others, or were there others also involved? For that, my party called for a parliamentary inquiry, because Pakistan can't afford to endanger its own nuclear system by scientists who begin to smuggle and proliferate weapons of mass destruction.
But he was flying C-130 of Pakistan Air Force to carry stuff. So is it possible that he was doing it alone?
Well, this is the issue that we want resolved at the inquiry, because it's amazing to think that he could have access to C-130 aircraft and go to North Korea, and not only go to North Korea, but go to so many other countries. I remember in General Musharraf's regime, there had been a full-page advertisement taken out by the Ministry of Commerce advertising the sale of nuclear components, and many of us were shocked. This is before AQ Khan's whole issue had been unearthed. So it was actually very shocking, and particularly in this world in which we live, you know, where terrorists want to get their hands on weapons of mass destruction. The entire world community, including Pakistanis who live in the diaspora, as well as all other human beings, could face devastating consequences if mad people manage to get lured by money. So I'd really like to find out more about how AQ Khan went around doing this. Musharraf has pardoned him. Well, that's one end of the spectrum. But the other end of the spectrum is we must make sure that something like this can never happen again.
Had AQ Khan not engaged in this kind of activities, would it have been possible today for Pakistan to sign a civilian nuclear agreement with the United States, as India has done?
It's a difficult call. It's a difficult call. I think that, you know, India is a larger market, and India is five times larger than Pakistan. And certainly in the post-Cold War, many academics had predicted that the Western world would start coming closer to India. So it's difficult to call, but certainly Pakistanis are disappointed that we weren't offered the same civil nuclear agreement. I hope that at some stage we are able to be offered such a civil nuclear cooperation. But I also want to take my generation away from the earlier generation's view of tit for tat with India. I mean, we can't keep competing with the Joneses. We have to identify our own core interests. We need to pursue our core interests and not seek to so overextend ourselves that we begin to collapse from within. And I think that's what the policy of strategic depth has done. It's threatening Pakistan from within. And today, if I risk my life to go back to my country, I do it because I see the threat within. And I want to try and help my people and help my country avert disaster.
The last question, if General Musharraf does not doff his military uniform, would you still go back to Pakistan before the end of the year?
Yes, I will go back to Pakistan whether Musharraf takes his uniform off or not. I will go back to Pakistan this year, irrespective of whether we have an agreement with General Musharraf or not. But I hope that General Musharraf will review, in light of the circumstances in Pakistan after the restoration of the Chief Justice of Pakistan, his decision to seek re-election in uniform from the present assemblies.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Bhutto.
Thank you.
Yale Global Online is the flagship publication of the Yale Center for the Study of Globalization. For more coverage of globalization issues in interviews and articles, please go to yaleglobal.yale.edu.